wife always tells me that certain times during the year I should just have a message on my machine, like a few days before Yom Kippur. The message should be, if you're pregnant and you want to know whether you should be fasting, such and such. And before Hanukkah, so the message should be, if you're planning on going away and you're going to be at your parents' house in here, where you should light, what you should do when, and before Pesach, if you're going to want to do Mechiriyat Gimriyat, every Yontif, every time of the year has its own unique shilas. So I always feel that this particular week, what they call winter break or Yeshiva week, whatever you want to call it, always has its shilas as well. And I would share the amount of emails with the following shilas, all the same shilas, doesn't matter where you go away, everyone has the same shilas. We just came, it's like as if people haven't done this for the last 20 years. We just arrived at such and such ski lounge, this, that, and that. And we want to know, how do we cash in the oven? How do you cash in the stove? How do you cash in this? How do you cash in that? The same story, the same people ask for the same shilas every year. So since we're really up to the topic right now, it's really a follow-up what we spoke about last week, so we'll talk about it now, even though for most people it's talking too late. I see, well, whoever's here is not asking the shilas, but theoretically, so these shilas do come up, they come up for everybody. So we'll talk a little bit about cashering stoves and cashering ovens, which is really a very real sense of follow-up what we spoke about the previous year. So remember last week we left off with the following yourself, we left off with a major question about what exactly the status of our ovens are. We said that our ovens receive valias, they receive infusion of taste through the principle called zeya, literally the sweat, the steam that's coming out of the food. That's what potentially trace up the ovens in the first place. It creates a problem of b'chol or chometz or a not kosher oven. So the question is, how would one remove zeya? Assuming that there's such a problem, how would one go about removing it? So we mentioned at the end of the shiur last week that there was a major machlokes, the Gedolei HaPoskim of America, the last generation, two generations already ago, as to what do you do when you have a zeya problem? How do you get rid of it? So there were some poskim were of the opinion that you can get rid of it basically through agola, that as long as you can take the oven and throw it into a pot of boiling water, that would solve the problem. Of course, that's not too practical. So we said instead of agola, you can do what's called liban kal, which basically means just turn on the oven for an hour or so, get it very, very hot, and that would be good enough. Then there were other poskim, Moshe, who said that, oh, it needs a liban gomer. You have to mamish blowtorch, you have to mamish burn out the oven, which is not all, sometimes not all that practical. So Moshe had serious issues with kashering our ovens, and we had a third possibility that maybe you need libun, but maybe since our ovens have thermostats on them, so then it doesn't have to get all that hot. It can get as hot as the thermostat gets. If it gets as hot as it ever got when the problem was started, that should be sufficient. So we spoke to Arichas last week, all the pros and cons of that question about kashering ovens. Then there was another issue that we ended off the show with last week, and we said we would continue from this point, and that is there is a difference in halacha between what's called the Isura Bola in contrast to Hatera Bola. If something became trace, literally through something that's awesome, Chazir, Nevelis, Traces, Mazachov, etc., that gets into the walls of the Kli, so then the Halacha differentiates between Libun in contrast to Hagola. But if something is what's called Hatera Bola, if it was never really trace in the first place, it's just that it had a Bliya, it had an absorption of a taste that at some point will become trace, at a later point in time will become problematic. As long as the Belia was what's called a Terabola, then everybody agrees that Hagola is good enough. That's based on the first of the Mamakomos, which is, I think was the last of the Mamakomos of the last year, so it was the first of the Mamakomos this year. That's based on the Gemara, the end of Avodah Zarah, where the Gemara points out, Rabbi Avraham Rav Sheshes, Tanan, Ashvudu Yaskulam Lavran Be'or. The Mishnah says in Avodah Zarah that if you buy a barbecue, a grate, or a spit or something from a guy, so you have to do Liban on it. We learned about kachin. If a person uses a shvud ve'askela megillah bechamin, if a person cooks karbonos or roasts karbonos on a grill, and then you want to kasher it because you want to use it for tomorrow. If you don't kasher it, it's going to become a nosar. The taste is going to become nosar. So the Gemara says there, the Mishnah says it suffices with hagola. So how come when it comes to a trefa grill you need libun, and it comes to a korban grill it's enough to do agola? So the Gemara responded, "Amrei Amram Bari, Rav Sheshes just said, my son Rav Amram, ma'inin kotchim et zagulia of the kichovim. What is the connection between karbonos and trefas from goyim? Hocha terabola, achis hotem isurabola. In one case it's a terabola, in another case it's isurabola. So the basic rule is, whenever something is a terabola, there's never ever a need for libun altogether. Hagola suffices according to everybody." So why is this relevant for us? This becomes relevant for us, not for the people who are going on trips who want to cash in their ovens. So you go to a trefa place, so the oven is what's called the Surah Bala. But for all of us who want to kasher our ovens before Pesach, so maybe one can argue that kashering before Pesach is called a terebola. Because if you think about it, when the chametz gets absorbed into the walls of the oven, it's still a davar mutter. I'm baking a cake now, so the chametz, the zeh, is going into the walls of the oven. Right now, it's not pesach yet. So right now, any belias that's taking place is a terebola. So maybe we can invoke this gemara in Masechet Avodah Zarah and say, whenever something is a terebola, the standards for kashering are significantly lower, and therefore it would be sufficient to just do hagola. Now obviously we're not going to do hagola on an oven, but remember we learned last week, whatever hagola suffices, libun kal also suffices. You just have to heat it up, you don't have to mamish get it to 900 degrees, you don't have to self-clean it, you just have to get it pretty hot, and that would be good enough. So that would be a great kula. So we spent a lot of time last week with Rav Moshe, Rav Aaron, Rav Henkin, everybody had what to say about kashering ovens. Maybe the whole machlokes is irrelevant when it comes to chametz and pesach. Maybe chametz and pesach would be, strangely enough, the most lenient of all. All other isurim are isurabala. Treifa ovens are isurabala. So that's the real problem. But a chametzik oven is a terabala, and therefore it would be okay. But this is assuming that we categorized chametz correctly. We said that chametz is like a terebola, because after all, isn't it? Isn't chametz a davra mutter? Right now, I'm cooking in the middle of January, it's a davra mutter. So shouldn't chametz be labeled as a terebola? So this is in fact the major machlokes of Rishonim. What's the issue? So half the Rishonim say that chametz is a terebola, Tosfos quotes such an opinion, but other Rishonim say no, chametz is a surabola. Why is chametz a surabola? So the Ramban writes that chametz is what's called shmoy alav. It's called chametz all year long. Hetera bola means like nosa. If I'm cooking meat of a korban, so it's not yet nosa. So I wouldn't call it nosa yet. It's only called nosa. It only gets the shame isra of nosa after the time passes. The next morning, it's called nosa. Before the next day, it's not called nosa yet. It's nothing. It's hetagomer. Chametz, we call chametz even in the middle of January. It's not yet Pesach. So your wife already tells you, don't bring chametz upstairs, don't bring chametz down to the basement. Chametz, January, what are they doing chametz? So the answer is that it's shmo chametz all year long. It happens to be that it's not yet also until Pesach rolls around. So it's not exactly a terebola. So that's a big machlekes of Rishonim. How do we treat chametz? Do we treat it as a terebola? Therefore, there's never a requirement of libun. You can kasher anything on Pesach, just do hagol alone. But do I say no? That the dinim of hagol and the dinim of libun, the differences do apply to chametz, because chametz is not subject to the leniency of a terebola. Chametz is still called isurabola. So this is going to impact kashering our oven. So a person wants to kasher his oven for Pesach, so do we say to him, everything's okay, it's great, just turn it on for a little while, make it hot, and show it, everything's great. Or do we say, nope, it needs libun, and then you have to decide whether an oven can actually meet the criteria of libun. So this is a machlekes in the Rishonim, a machlekes in Shulchan Aruch, in the second of the Maamar Kamos. So the Shulchan Aruch in Luchas Pesach, at Tibet Tafsir, and Aleph Sif Dalet tells us, Kelim Shemishtam Shemem Laideh, or any utensil that's used directly in the fire, kom Shvudim Yaskalos, grills, etc., b'chayayitvem tzrichim libun, you require to have libun, and the libun v'achi unitzotzos nitzimim, it's kind of sparks flying, not as it is, that'd be pretty, pretty hot. And our regular ovens don't make the mark for that. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Machmirim that chametz is called Isura Bola, and therefore, if and when the absorption of taste took place through direct heat, it requires libun. Says the Ramah, v'yesh mekilim, and there are some who say, im nislabin kol kach shekash nisraf alavi v'chutz, if you got it hot enough that a piece of straw could burn on it, that's good enough. Where in the world did that come from? So that's a quote from the Mordechai, and the Mordechai says, if it gets hot enough that the straw could burn, that's what's called libun kal, which is the equivalent of hagola. It means whatever hagola is sufficient, libun kal is good enough as well. So from the fact that the Ramah quotes yesh omrim yesh mekilim, that libun kal is good enough, what the Ramah is really saying is that yesh omrim, that chometz is a terebola, it never needs libun. The Nogin Kaspar Rishona, and the Ramah writes that the Arminig is like the first opinion. So even though the Ramah didn't make reference to the second view, to the Mekilim, Mikra is in the Ramah size of the first, and that's what we passed in Halacha L'Maisa. So we had this grandiose idea of kashering our ovens, the Pesach. You imagine, I'll tell somebody, if it's a treif oven, then you got to really, really, really kasher it. For Pesach, let's pay. Usually our mindset is the opposite. Usually people go nuts, Pesach time. So here we're telling people, Pesach, it's a terrible, everything's okay. So the Ramah says it was a nice svar, it's a nice lomdus, patachlis, noigin kisvar rishayna. So we pass in the halacha that the same exact standards of kashering are going to be necessary. So up until now, we're working with the assumption that ovens are a real problem. Regular ovens are a real problem. May or may not be able to be kosher. Self-clean ovens are also a real problem, but Baruch Hashem can be kosher. What about the next level of question, which also the question came in this week. What about a microwave? Does a microwave have any bleas altogether? And assuming that it has bleas, if and how, is it possible to be kosher? So why would anybody think that a microwave does or does not have bleos? So there are certain metzias issues that have to be determined and certain halachic issues that have to be determined. The metzias issues are pros and cons in terms of a microwave. Because if you remember, the whole issue of ovens started last week with the issue of zeya. The fact that there's a lot of steam in an oven, that's what causes the problem. So a microwave has even more steam than a regular oven. Alright, open up a microwave. If you put up something in the microwave for long, so there's a lot of steam. It steams up in the microwave. So one can argue that that should be a very real problem, at least as problematic as regular ovens, if not even more problematic. Last week we learned that there are certain mekilim. Some folks can say, if it's solid foods, maybe there's no zeya. Maybe all those distinctions break down in the microwave. Microwave, the mice, you turn on the microwave, put something in, it does steam up. That's the bad news for microwaves. The good news for microwaves, if the walls don't get hot. The food gets hot, but the walls don't get hot. And since the walls don't get hot, so then maybe there's no bleas altogether. It's what's called tzonim, tzonim behadocha. If you have two cold foods that touch each other, you just wash them off and shine. So we're not quite sure what the metzias is in terms of microwaves. We may be leaning in the direction that there's super duper bleas. We may be leaning in the direction that there's no bleas whatsoever. But there's a halachic issue that has to be determined in terms of microwaves, and that is as follows. There is a question in Hilchos Shabbos whether microwaves are considered to be bishul in the first place. The reason why they may not be called bishul is because there is no flame that's present. A microwave works in a totally different way. There is no flame, there's no fire that's actually burning that's heating up the food. Why is that important? Because the Mishnah tells us in Masechta Shabbos that if a person cooks in the sun, that's not considered to be bishul on Shabbos. Min ha-Torah for sure not, and sometimes even midrabanan. Bishul b'cham is not called bishul. The question is, why exactly is that? So that's a big machlokes in the poskim. Why exactly is bishul b'cham not called bishul? So that was the machlokes, the gedolei olam between Rav Moshe and Rav Shlomo Zalman. Rav Moshe was of the opinion the reason why the Mishnah says that bishul b'cham is not called a bishul is because it's not derech bishul. It's not the normal way to cook. But the implication would be that if it becomes the normal way to cook, if you live in a place where people do cook in the sun, like solar heating in Eretz Yisrael is very normal, so then it is considered to be bishul. According to the Moshe, there's no halachic reason why cooking in the sun is not called bishul. It's just a technicality that's not normal, which can change according to the time or place. So based on this, they asked Rav Moshe, what would he say about a microwave? So Rav Moshe said that a microwave is the halachic equivalent of the sun. It means it heats up the food, albeit there's no real flame that we could speak of. So is that called bishul or not? So Rav Moshe says it depends on one factor alone. Is it normal? If it's normal, then it's called bishul. If it's not normal, then it's not called bishul. So Rav Moshe wrote this tshuva originally back in the 1950s, 60s, when microwaves existed, but were not exactly a standard in every kitchen. So Rav Moshe writes that right now microwaves are not really a normal way of cooking things up. But Rav Moshe writes, he thinks that as they improve, so they can become more prominent in that kitchen. Moshe had a shtickle of Ruch HaKadosh, so that the microwaves became very, very normal. And therefore, Rav Moshe would argue, once it becomes a normal way of cooking and heating, and heat up water in it, you cook other things in it. So Rav Moshe says, cooking in a microwave is absolute bishul min haTorah for the purpose of Hilchos Shabbos. So Rav Shlomo Zalman disagreed with Rav Moshe. Rav Shlomo Zalman said that the reason why cooking in the sun is not called bishul, not because it's not normal, but because it's just not called bishul, because there's no flame. And part of the halachic definition of bishul is that there has to be a flame present. Therefore, according to Rav Shlomo Zalman, this halacha will never change according to time and place. There's a constant in halacha that bishul without a flame is nishkein bishul. But this machlokes seems to only be relevant in terms of a Shabbos. What in the world does that have to do with us in terms of kashrus? So we have to understand, based on the third of the Mamakamas, why this machlokes becomes critical for us. And the third of the Mamakamas, the Shulchan Aruch quotes for us in Siddin Kuf Hei the following question. Chom shel kli rishon shel yatzo letizbo, mevasho ve'oser kula. If you have kli rishon means something that's either sitting on the fire now, or at one time was on the fire, and it's hot, so then that's a disaster. That will spread bleas, that will spread a transfer of taste, no matter what. So let's say, for example, I have a big, big pot of chicken soup. I take the chicken soup off the fire, it's still called the kli rishon, and I stick my milchik spoon into the... Okay, it's so bad. I stick the... I'm not sure which one to this. Oh, don't know. I guess I'll turn off. Can you hear this? Can you have this one still? Okay. So I have a pot of chicken soup. So it was on the fire. It's called the Kli Rishon Al Gabi Aish. I take it off the fire, still boiling hot. It's called the Kli Rishon Shelo Al Gabi Aish. I stick my milchik spoon inside, so that creates problems. Anytime I have a Kli Rishon, dish will take place in a Kli Rishon. What about in a Kli Sheni? What if I empty the contents of this chicken soup into a bowl, and now I stick my milchik spoon inside? I imagine this has happened to everybody here one time in their married life. If I got screamed at for it, so I took a milchik spoon and I stuck it into a bowl of chicken soup, not a pot of chicken soup. Does anything happen or not? So the Shulchan Aruch tells us about chom shel Kli Sheni einam avashel, v'yesh omim shegam ke einam machli v'einam avliya. Just as in Hilchos Shabbos we have a rule that Kli Sheni technically doesn't create bishul, there are different reasons why we're machmir not to cook things in a Kli Sheni, but fundamentally Kli Sheni doesn't create bishul. So there are some Rishonim who say if it doesn't create bishul, that it doesn't cause bliyah either, it doesn't cause any change of taste, any absorption, any of taste, everything's fine. But what that would mean is practically, if you use your milchik spoon for your chicken soup in your bowl, everything's fine. You use your fleshik spoon for your cup of coffee with milk, everything's fine. As long as everything was a cliche. But the Yeshom, and there are those who say, to become makam u'mafir u'mavliya, those who get a klipa, there are those who say that even though it's not levashel, but it does still cause potential problems, and it could create a certain degree, not a complete bliya, but a certain degree of bliya. Shachrach says we should really try lechetchila to be machmir for this opinion. So therefore, when we run our kitchens, we do not use milk and spoons with bowls of chicken soup. We don't use fleshing spoons with cups of coffee and milk. We try to keep things separate, even though most of the food that we're actually eating is already cliché. Most of the food, once it's down the pot, is already not going to be subject to the real rules of klivishon. According to the Mekilim, who seem to be the Ikik Radin, we try not to follow, but the Ikik Radin, we rely on them, that there is no blias whenever it's a Kli Sheni, that's based on the following principle. When there's no bishul, there's no blias. Those two halachic terms go hand in hand. If there's no bishul, there's no blias. So now, if you want to take that and plug that into the microwave question, according to Shlomo Zalman, we would have an interesting kula in terms of microwaves. Because according to Shlomo Zalman, there cannot be bishul in a microwave. It is impossible. No matter how normal it is, if there's no flame, then there's no bishul. We'll just add that together with these Rishonim will say, if there's no flame, there's no bishul. And when there's no bishul, there's no blias. So then, I think if I'm not mistaken, my first day of geometry, if A equals B and B equals C, then A equals C. So the bottom line is, if bishul and blias go hand in hand, and microwaves are no bishul, then microwaves are no blias either. So with a one fell swoop, according to Shlomo Zalman, microwaves are totally good. You can use a trefa microwave, you can use a chametika microwave, you can use a fleshik microwave. There's nothing. If there's no bishul, there's no blias. Now, we're not going to be so quick to rely on that kula for two reasons. First of all, the Shulchan Aruch himself told us that we're not really supposed to rely on that equation so fast. We're supposed to be machmir even when there's no bishul, there is blias. And number two, we're not so sure that we don't follow Ramesh. Ramesh is right that there is bishul in microwaves today because it's normal bishul. So it's a chiddush. It's a chiddush agav a chiddush. It's a sniff lahakha when it comes to microwaves. But
the fact that the microwave is the material, it's not a metal, it's not glass.
It's plastic. Plastic has bleeds to it. We assume there is bleeds in plastic. I think so. So, when all the dust cells in microwaves are going to depend on who you ask, there are a lot of factors in microwaves. We have a few Matthias factors. Some of the Matthias factors point in the direction that it's more problematic. Some may point in the direction that it's less problematic. The halachic factor of, well, there's no bishul, there's no bliya, also may play a role, but we're not sure how true that statement is, and we're not even sure if there's no bishul with certainty in a microwave. So therefore, when I tell people about microwaves, we should assume, at least the chachila, once you try to keep a microwave, either fleshes or milchis, and use it for that. But the evidence of a person heated something in the wrong microwave or something, depends on you ask whether we have to ask for the food with the evidence. But the chachila wants to try to keep microwaves separate. Therefore, if one wants to cook in a tray for microwave, either one has to completely wrap up the food in such a way that it's not exposed to the outside, or one could possibly kasher the microwave. How would one go about kashering the microwave? So this is a throwback to what we spoke about before. L'chora, kashering the microwave should mimic the kashering of the ovens. Namely, you turn on the microwave, make it as hot as it was before. Problem is, You can't turn on the microwave with nothing in it. That's not going to do anything. You have to put something in the microwave that's going to heat it up to the way it was heated up when you made food in it. So the best thing to do is you take a cup of water and you turn on the microwave for a couple of minutes. It's going to steam up the microwave, so whatever went in is going to come out. This is assuming that the material that the microwave is made of is kasherable, namely that it's plastic. So that was also a question. There was some who were chayshesh that maybe you shouldn't kasher plastic altogether. Maybe plastic is considered to be almost like glass, which we, the Ramah's Machma, we try to avoid kashering. We assume that there's no way to kasher glass. So others disagree with that. Me'ik mikra din v'paskin, you probably can kasher plastic. So therefore, well, we're okay with kashering microwaves. But see of the fact, we're not even sure we had a problem in the first place. So therefore, halach l'maisa, what we tell people to do is a microwave, they should try to keep a fleishig microwave or a milchig microwave, try to keep them separate. If for whatever reason one wants to use a treifer microwave or vice versa, you want to kosher it, so then the best thing to do is you fill up, make sure it's clean, and you fill up a cup of water for a few minutes, steams up, and then the meikra din, that would be acceptable. So up until now we've been talking a lot about the kashering of the ovens. What about the kashering of the kira, the kashering of the stove top? So the question is there any need to kasher a stovetop in the first place? So what was the worst case scenario? Somebody cooked a chazer pot of food on the stovetop, and I'm going to come into the ski lodge now, I'm going to use that same burner to cook my kosher pot of chicken soup. Should that be a problem or not? So the fourth in the Ramakomos, it's in the Ramah, and Hukas Bas B'chol, Sumin Tzadi Beis, so the question is, how covered is it? You know, there's covered and there's covered. So some people really, really wrap it up in saran wrap or something. You know, when I throw something into the microwave, I'll throw a plate over a bowl of soup or something. So half the time the plate falls off, you know, or it's open and it cracks and there is some steam there. If a person mamish covers everything, then it's okay. So the Ramon, the fourth of the Ramakamos, in Sibin Tzadi Beis, Sifches, quotes that neither the Havi Ashtei Kederes Nogo Zubazu, to Ein Osen Zuazu Benagia, Kosh Game Dezeya. So the Ramah is referring to a sheet that appears in the Mordechai, which is based on the Tosu Masech Tchulin, that if I have a treifa pot, and my treifa pot touches my kosher pot, since the two pots touch one another, whatever bleas, whatever absorption, whatever taste is inside the walls of the treifa pot, don't come out. Something has to bring out the bleas. So the only thing that can bring out the bleas is some kind of a liquid. So if I have a liquid in between the two pots, that's the problem. But if I have two dry pots touching one another, so a blea doesn't leave one kli and just enter onto another kli. So that principle of ain't a kli, that's one kli, one dry kli, can't ask another dry kli, that seems to play out in terms of stovetops. Because if you think about it, the goy cooked his chaza pot on the stovetop. So what happened exactly? What went into the stovetop? What exactly became treif? The fact that his pot touched my stovetop, or his stovetop, wherever it is, nothing happened. Ain't kli balam ni kli. Kli doesn't go from one kli to another kli. Hello, what are we afraid of? We're afraid that some of the chazer mamish spilled over. Some of his chazer soup spilled over, and mamish got directly into the burner. So let's assume for that worst case scenario, this is great, the stovetop became mamish full with balur with chazer. When I come a week later and I put my chicken soup pot on top of it, so what are we afraid of exactly? What's going to happen? Right now, there's no chazer on. Chazer was washed off, was cleaned already. The only chazer that's left is the chazer that's valua inside the grate. When I put my chicken soup on top of that grate, what's going to happen? Nothing's going to happen. Ain't kli balam kli. Unless what? Unless some of my chicken soup spills over also. And now there's rotor, now there's liquid, now there's some kind of a gravy, some kind of a liquid medium. So maybe the blea is going to transfer through that liquid. So first of all, a lot of things have to have gone wrong in order for that to happen. Number one, his chaza has to have spilled over, and my chicken soup has to have spilled over. And number two, many posts can point out, that just a little insignificant amount of liquid isn't going to do the trick. It's got to be a real, real shtack to spill in order for the time to transfer. So therefore, the pashta dvarim is that whenever you're dealing with a stovetop, nothing terrible could really go wrong. And we basically rely on this, not so much in terms of chaza, we rely on it in terms of bas b'cholov. Most of us use the same stovetop for fleishiks and milchiks. So we put that chicken soup on this burner, and then tomorrow morning he wants to cook up for you something with milk in it on the same burner. So how can you do that? Using a fleishik burner and a milchik burner, isn't that treif? So the answer is not treif, because ain't kli b'lehem mikli. The burner never became fleishiks in the first place, And even if by some quirk it became fleishig, it can't transfer that fleishig back into the milchik pot, because ain kli b'lemikli elayidei rotev. So most of us are relying on this kula anyway. So the question, there is a machlokes aposkim, whether this is a good kula lechatchila or only b'diavad. So Rav Moshe was of the opinion that you can really rely on this even lechatchila. Ain kli b'lemikli, there's nothing to worry about. The only time that we are very weary about relying on this kula here is when it comes to Pesach. Now Pesach, we said before, is usually more chomer than the rest of the year, and this is in fact one example where Pesach is in fact more chomer than the rest of the year. That's a comment that the Mishnah, take a look at the fifth of the Rambam Kamos. So the Mishnah Brura is commenting on a statement of the Ramah, Chatzuva Tzorech Libun. And Chatzuva, what is a Chatzuva? So the Mishnah Brura explains, Hu Kli Sheish La Gimel Raglayim, so like a tripod, Ramidin Ale Kedera, and you put a pot on it, or machavas, or a pan, Betaner Ale Or Kalashana. So you have something which you're not actually cooking in, but you're cooking in a pot on. So it's like a, it's basically like a burner, like a grate of a stove. So the Rambam says that this chatzuva requires libun. You have to kasher it for Pesach. The imrot nishtamish for Pesach tzorech alavna ba'or. So why is that? Because maybe some chametz spilled onto it during the course of the year. V'zel rak lechatchila, says mishabushim chumid the chametz. To be honest, because in reality, shtei kederes anogu zu bazu, en yotis ablim izu lazu, kimvur biyardeya simon tzadi beisiv ches, which is exactly what the previous Mar Mochum was. So basically, the Mishnah Berurah tells us that this whole chumra of chatzuva tzorech libun is unique to Hilchos Pesach. So it's based on this that Rav Moshe writes in the Tshuva, that technically speaking, you can really use a treifa stovetop without any problems, as long as it's clean, as long as there's no mamish be'en, there's no chaza sitting on top of it that you can actually see with your eyes, so you could put your chicken soup pot on top of it, on top of the chaza stovetop. Why? Because it didn't really become chaza, because ain't kli b'leh mi kli. So Rav Moshe writes, Nikra din, if you go into a treifa apartment, you go into a treifa hotel, you go and you want to just take the pot and just put them directly onto the stove, you don't really have to kasher it. The ovens you have to kasher because of the zeh, and the stovetop you don't really have to kasher. I think the minhag is that people do kasher anyway. The people sign herbs, they kasher anyway. But me'ita mikra din, they don't have to kasher. The only time that you have to kasher it is only for Pesach. Because Pesach, we don't rely on the skula of ain kli b'leh mikli. Since there are some rishonim who disagree with the skula, there's a Ran and Masechus Chula, in Masechus Chula that probably doesn't accept the skula. Tosfos has the skula, but the Ran probably disagrees with it. So for Pesach, the minhag became to be a little bit more machmir. That's what Rav Moshe writes in his Teshuvah, that when you want to kasher your stovetop, so the kasher from treif to kosher, you don't really have to. The kasher from fleishes to milchis, you don't really have to. But the kasher from chametz to Pesach, that you have to, because the halach is chatzuva tzorech libun. So then there's another mitigating factor, which would also be part of the reason why we're, most of us are pretty lenient to use the same burners back and forth fleishes to milchis, besides the kula that we said before, ben kli b'leh mikli, maybe based on another halach as well. Take a look at the sixth of the Mamre Kamos. So the Shulchan Aruch is talking about a complicated case. It's the end of a whole discussion of a complicated scenario. If a person is cooking fleishig, cooking his chicken soup in a pot, and some milk gets into the pot, but not literally into the pot itself, it gets on the outside of the pot. Some milk spritzes onto the outside of the pot. Nafal tzipas cholof kineged keder mibachutz. So what do you do? So there's a Gemara, a whole Mishnah, a whole Gemara in Masechus Chulin about if a tipas challah falls into a pot, I'm cooking chicken soup and milk falls in, what do you do? But Mashish, not but Mashishim, a whole story in Chul Daf Kuf Ches. So the Rishonim take over where the Gemara left off. The Gemara doesn't talk about the other case where the milk spritzes on the outside of the pot, but the Rishonim begin to discuss that. So comes the Shulchan Aruch and says, Nogu Olam Lesar, Kishanafu Al Adolfin, Shulchan Aga Nerotev. So it gives you a whole, depends on where the milk fell, did it fall to corresponding to where the soup is actually cooking. Not the soup, a whole complicated story, not for us right now. But says the Shulchan Aruch, V'davgi kshenafel b'al satsacha eno kineged ha'esh. Says the Shulchan Aruch, this whole discussion is only makes sense if the milk falls and the part of the pot that's not mamish sitting on the fire. If the drop of milk falls mamish into the fire, into the side of the pot that's sitting on the fire, mutter, everything's mutter. You know why? Sha'esh sor from yapsho. the fire, the heat of the flame immediately dries, immediately evaporates the milk. The milk doesn't cause any problems. The milk can only cause problems if it makes its way, if it seeps its way through the walls of the pot into the food itself. But if it gets destroyed in the process, then there's nothing to talk about. So the Shacharit quotes from the Rishayim this idea that if milk falls in an area where the flames are shooting out, then the flames just swallow it up, eat it up, and destroy the milk, but there's nothing to worry about. Yazik there and Amishari. But the Shacharit puts the brakes on this. The Dafka B'davar Mu'a, that's only if it's a small amount, you don't tipa. So Nafal Harbe, in Lahat, that's through Nafal Kedegar Eish. So then he says, if it's a lot of milk, you pour a whole cup of milk in the side of your pot, so the flame's not going to be able to eat it all up, so it's going to cause problems, it's going to get inside the walls of the pot, permeate its way, and get into the food itself. So Rabbi Shah quotes this discussion when he talks about using the same burners back and forth with fleshings to milk. Rabbi Shah says, what's the worst case scenario? I'm cooking chicken soup. What are we afraid? That some of the chicken soup spilled onto the burner, and about the fleshings made the burner fleshings, and then 20 minutes later I'm going to put a pot of cooked pasta and cheese on the same burner, and the blizz is going to come out. So Rabbi Shah says, forget about it. Whatever drop of chicken soup did or didn't fall, worst case scenario, it fell, it got destroyed right away. The flames will lick it up with the chicken soup. The chicken soup falls on, it gets eaten up right away. So Rabbi Shah says, what, it's a lot, how much fell? And even if it's a lot that fell, it's mamish, the flames are mamish there, it's eating away right away, there's nothing to worry about. So Rabbi Shah had a few tzadim to defend the practice of using burners back and forth, which again, I think, we do it in our house, I assume most people do the same thing, that they use the same burners. Most people don't have designated burners for fleshings and milchiks, so we assume that it's not a problem. We assume it's not a problem for a variety of reasons, either because ain kli b'lehem kli, or because even if there is some degree of b'liya, but when the flame is right there, the flame consumes the milk, and if the chicken soup will prevent any real b'liyas from taking place. So at the end of the day, we have to try to plug in all of these kolalim that all come from the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch, all to try to figure out how all this plays out in the modern day kitchens. So we have the primary issue of ovens, that was the issue of did it become a problem in the first place? Was Zeya really a problem that we spoke about last week? And assuming that Zeya is a problem, how did you get rid of it? We spoke about the end of the week, last week, and the beginning of this week, in terms of what method, if any, can be used to kasher a Zeya problem. Then we moved on to the question of chametz. Maybe chametz is better or worse, as malos and chesronos. Then we talked about the unique status of a microwave, because microwave has some physical aspects which make it worse or make it better. Halachically, it touches on the issue of bishul and bliya, Moshe b'shalom zalman. And then we moved out of the realm of the ovens into the realm of the stovetops, where stovetops became significantly more lenient because there is no zeh anyway. It's just a question of one kli being b'leh from another kli, which really doesn't happen. And then you have the other mitigating factor that the food gets kind of swallowed up in the process. Even though the ikra din, the stovetops are not really a problem, but in terms of Pesach, so that already the Rishonim had a tradition that when it comes to Pesach, we are machmer. And this, we don't learn any of these kulos, and therefore we would never think of putting a Pesach pot on our chametz stick of stovetops without kashering them. Okay.